You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
It is Thursday, March 2nd, 2016, 2017. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. My name is Greg Sussman. Here with Tony Zingana, Corey Parsons, the Fantasy Executive, and of course, the King, Scott Engel, who's got a full pad full of notes today. Because Scott is back and ready to go. What is going on, Scott? How you feeling, my man?
Feeling better. It's good to be back. Thank you.
You're very welcome. What's this notebook you bring on today?
Just made some notes this morning about baseball and the NBA.
Interesting.
You know, after getting up early and, you know, doing some studying.
That is a full pad full of notes, sir.
Yes.
I'm impressed with the homework, then.
Thank you.
Corey, how are you feeling?
I can't have it all in my head like you.
Oh, well, thank you. Corey, how are you feeling, my man?
I feel pretty good, you know what I'm saying? Actually, I'm pretty tired, you know what I mean? Got a lot going on. It's just not enough hours in the day, man. Yeah. And then we start early, and it's still not enough hours in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got
gotcha. Disastrous.
Tony, what's up, my man?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. You know, everything's going well. I can't complain, even if I could. What the hell?
Hey, what the hell indeed. What the hell indeed. Now, oh my goodness. On the program today, we are going to talk a little football. Corey, you had some combine interest. Of course, you're going to host the combine show tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yeah.
Full week of work here for you.
Yeah. Next time I'll be off will be like March 19th, something like that. But you know what? That's what I'm here for. You know what
yes.
I'm saying? Fantasy executive. Get ready to rock and roll. You know, I'm trying to talk myself up. You know what I mean? I'm trying to give myself a pep talk. I'll be honest. I had to listen to two gospel songs this morning.
Why? Just came up randomly?
No. It's just... You know, the first one didn't get me in the right, you know, mood. And then, so I had to do two gospel songs. Then I switched to Young Jeezy. It's all downhill from here, Greg.
You went from heaven to hell.
Yeah, basically. There you go right there. Just took care of my telephone bill if anybody's trying to reach me.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we can still call you. We are...
Maybe it's not a good thing. No, let me stop.
We're gonna talk about Scotty's back, about this mock draft that we completed. Just, you know, both the players that we all have and some, I don't know, etiquette with the mock draft. We talk a lot about etiquette on the show, so I want to get into that. We had some an NFL thing that bugs the hell out of me that I wanted to bring up to you guys. 9 o'clock hour, we'll get into another Shark Tank. I have another idea that I wanted people to bring to the table and see what you guys are thinking there. We'll hear from Damari Carroll on the program today. It comes up at about 8:45, and God knows we'll get into in between here. So
in the meantime, in between time, you never know what'll happen.
Yeah. Exactly. So let me start out today's show.
Where you want to start?
I what? You want to, please.
I got it.
You already got the finger up here. So.
We didn't have to go to it, but please, I got a notification on Twitter last night.
Right.
From a young lady.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said that she always attends her man's draft.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm. To make sure that he makes the right picks. And because the trash talk is hilarious and they have a good, and she has a good time, she really
does. Does she have like a stake in this or what?
I don't think she has a stake at all. You know what I'm saying? So, yes.
She likes the trash talk.
She likes the trash talk and she wants to make sure that her gentleman, his lineups are good to go.
This is football or baseball?
This is football.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
I'm just curious.
Does your wife go with you to any drafts?
No.
If a young lady was going to go with you to a draft, it would be a football draft.
That's not a baseball draft.
Yeah. She goes you to a baseball draft, then it's like Jessica Kleinschmidt. No, I don't want to. No, let me stop. I don't like her. I do. Go ahead.
Are you still drunk this morning?
I took it down. I only had one last night.
You're talking a lot in 3 minutes, so I was very worried about you.
I'm sorry, Tom.
No, oh, okay. No, I like it. If you're drunk, it's going to be a good show.
Yeah, I wish I was.
I would encourage everyone to drink before the show.
not a bad idea. We got it. It's a bar right there.
Would
not
you
even,
have a, would you have a
not
bar?
Even 50, not even 50 feet away. You know what I'm saying?
It's like a tractor beam.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna be partaking in that yet, Tony. It's a little early for me, to be being honest.
Maybe a Friday.
Yeah, you know, maybe a Friday. Hey, tomorrow should be a fun show. We'll get into that, obviously, tomorrow. But I wanted to get into, guys, to start off the show today, I wanted to ask about overrated and underrated and overachievers and underachievers. And, you know, there's certain players last year that can be qualified as they probably overachieved. And I think that sometimes it's built into their draft stock and their draft status a little bit. And sometimes it goes kind of almost like too far down the ledge, right? I look at a guy like a Rick Porcello, for instance. He won the Cy Young last year, right? It was like the greatest year of his career, right? And Porcello pitches for the Red Sox. It's a great team. And we talked really months ago at this point about a guy like Jay Happ, who had an amazing year. And it was this great year for him, this great year for his team, blah, blah, blah. And Jay Happ is a guy that I understand overachieving. You look at these numbers, and they're brutal. So Rick Porcello, Jay Happ, really two of the top pitchers in the American League last year. And I feel like when it comes to fantasy drafts, nobody wants them. In our mock draft, for instance, Rick Porcello went in the 10th round. Jay Happ went in the 19th. I get what the peripherals look like. I get that there's certainly a lot of reason to believe these guys are going to come way back down to earth here in 2017. But how far back down to earth is that, right? Are we almost overcompensating for the overachieving, Scotty?
I think so. I mean, it's interesting because, like, I read the Fantasy Baseball Guy Professional Edition. You get every expert weighing in with their picks and pans on certain picks. And on average, you'll get, like, 2 to 3 guys. Rick Porcello, there was about 14 experts weighing in with pans.
Right.
You know, just like everybody is just like falling in line with the regression. Porcello didn't have a bad month last year. It's like he had like this. Not only was he good, but he had this like perfect constellation of everything coming together. But you know, he's going to regress, but he still pitches on the Red Sox. He can't chase wins, but this is still a 15-win guy. Of course, I expect him to regress, but I don't expect him to blow up either. And, you know, maybe people letting him slip a little bit far because of that. You know, I think, you know, he's a quality pitcher. He's not nearly as dominant as Cy Young winner, obviously, but I think he's a very good pitcher. And people I talked to out of Boston saying, you know, his confidence is soaring after last season. He's going to have some regression. I don't think you can have a year like that 2 years in a row, but I don't think you avoid the guy either.
The 10th round is where I said he went in the mock. Is that right for you, low for you?
I think it's about in the right area because you're not drafting him like where Cy Young would. But, you know, I might prefer maybe more of the but I'm splitting hairs, maybe more the 11th, 12th. I really don't have a big problem with it. I think he's still going to be a winning pitcher. Again, you can't chase wins, but on Boston, you're going to get a lot of run support. Obviously, the guy knows what he's doing in terms of keeping the ball down, and I think he could still be a really good third pitcher in your fantasy staff.
Rick Porcello is ADP is 110, Tone.
It's funny what you listen to Scott talk about it because people are totally wrong about this guy. He doesn't do anything great, right? The wins were 22
sure.
wins. Like, you can't chase wins there. And he keeps the ball on the ground. He had the worst year of keeping the ball on the ground in actuality. It was only 43%. Times when he sucked, he was at 55% ground ball rate. So he didn't do a good job there. ERA, 3.15. His FIP was 3.15. He's a 3.50 pitcher. Yeah. You put him at 15 wins, and he doesn't get you strikeouts. His whip is going to be good because he doesn't walk people. He is what he is. 10th round, that's probably where it should go.
Rick Porcello is going as the overachieving Cy Young Award winner, for instance. I said 110 ADP, Corey. Would you rather have Rick Porcello, the reigning Cy Young Award winner, or Zach Greinke, who had a brutal year last year?
Oh, that's a tough call right there. Excuse me. That's a tough call right there between those two. Obviously, you're looking at the guy with Greinke, who has excellent stuff coming off a down season. And you're also getting a discount on him this year. Porcello, on the other hand, is a guy almost the opposite of Zach Greinke.
Sure.
Give me the guy on the better team.
So that would be Rick Porcello.
That'd be Rick Porcello.
Interesting. Scotty.
Yeah, I have to go with Greinke here. Like Tony says, like, and I was thinking about 10th round is ideal. It's like if I'm getting Greinke in the 9th, I'm very happy. He's just not as bad as he was last year, and I'm expecting a big bounce back year.
Antone?
I like Greinke a little better, and the problem is I don't think I'd pick Greinke because I don't think really he's going to drug go. When we draft for real,
yep.
I don't see him going 9th or 10th round. I think if he goes to 6th or 7th round, that's where I would expect him to go.
I completely agree with that.
So I could see passing on him there and waiting to the 10th round for Porcello. Yeah.
Okay.
But if they're both
because I've seen him go 9th in mocks, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. When you draft for real, which of course will come your way or come our way shortly. Now, another overachiever, certainly, in a little different way than Rick Porcello, was Kyle Hendricks. I mean, we talked a lot about that as well. The ERA, the BABIP, and that kind of stuff, and that Kyle Hendricks can't nearly be as good as he was in 2015, as he was in 2016. Kyle Hendricks' ADP currently sits 65. In the mock draft, for instance, Kyle Hendricks went to Jake in the 7th round. Is Kyle Hendricks do we think that he's going to continue to fall back down to earth a little bit here, Tony, and that he's like a SP2, or should he be drafted as a back-end SP1, which the stats certainly indicated last year?
No, if you go in with a 1 with this guy, I think that's going to be too much. And you'd have to get strikeouts somewhere down the line. Last year, 8.05 was a career. He's right around 8.35 the year before that. Down in 2014 in 80 innings, he's at 5.27. So he's always put together decent ERAs, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was right around 3.
Yep.
Which is up to 2 points, and still that's going to put him in the top 10 in baseball. So I don't want him as a number one, but I think you can get away with it with a strong offense, and you're just going to have to pick up strikeouts. Like if you go Kyle Hendricks, the next guy to get is just SP2 would be Danny Salazar, and then hope that the strikeout that you know he can make 28 starts. Well, you're going to have to do something like that just to get back in a strikeout race. You can make this pick.
Yeah,
you can make him a starting pitcher one.
It's no coincidence actually that I brought up the two guys that don't really strike out pitchers because we get to Shark Tank 9 a.m. hour. I want everybody to present a pitcher that you know doesn't really strike guys out, that isn't known for strikeouts, because so often we go into drafts, we want guys to blow us away. Even when it comes to closers, right? You want guys to blow players away that are just big with the strikeouts, and you want the strikeouts. And I think sometimes guys that you know don't necessarily strike anybody out or strike out fewer batters, like fewer than let's say 180 batters or so, perhaps go overlooked despite the stats. And I think that'd be someone that'd be something that'd be great that each one of us can present to the investors sitting at this very table. So look forward to that, like I said, in the 9 o'clock hour. Two guys also that I think overachieved a little bit last year, and I want to know if you guys think they're properly going where they should or maybe they are undervalued in a way. Well, I'd love to get your thoughts there. And that's a guy named Justin Verlander. Corey, Justin Verlander, second half of 2015 was tremendous, and then all of last year really had a very good year. He finished second in the Cy Young Award voting. Verlander is the 10th pitcher off the board. ADP currently sits at 41, but if you look at the BABIP for Justin Verlander, it was at 255 last year. Kyle Hendricks is at 250, Justin Verlander at 255. So now is that because it was just thrown pitches in the right spots where people barely would make contact, they wouldn't get hits, or did he get lucky? Justin Verlander is not the pitcher that he was in his prime. He's maybe figured out how to pitch differently without being able to throw 100 miles per hour anymore. Is Justin Verlander, is his overachieving last year a true overachievement, or is this just the new Justin Verlander?
I think this is the new Justin Verlander. I'm not going to go and say this is a true overachievement because of the skill set that Justin Verlander has, you know what I mean? Now, you look back to 2016, you know what I'm saying, with the ERA, just over 3,254 strikeouts. Even if you do see regression, what the ERA may creep to a little over 3, I still think you get over 200K. So at SP10, I can see it. I can get down with it at SP10. because of the talent, the craftiness. He's a guy who knows how to pitch, so I still think he's going to be in play. I just look at the other season, which season was that? The 2015 season as really an outlier season. It doesn't match up with any of the numbers, and you see him bounce right back last season.
Yeah, still a good quality pitcher. You look at the ERA, it's 3.04, but the FIP is 3.48, to Corey's point. Like, you know, he could still be like mid threes. Maybe the strikeout rate a little bit high, but, you know, not expecting too much regression. You know, maybe about 9/9. Last year he started to throw the slider a little bit more and threw the changeup a little bit less, and it seemed to work for him. I'm not expecting any major regression from Verlander, but, you know, you do wonder sometimes. You know, he's 34 years old. When is a fall-off going to happen because of all the innings that are on his arm? That's the one thing you have to be concerned about.
Now, what was his FIP again, Scotty?
350.
What does that
348.
Mean?
348. Fielding independent pitching.
I know, but, like, how does
what does it mean? He's asking.
Basically, like, everything that a pitcher would be responsible for, like walks, strikeouts, home runs, it really doesn't involve the defense to give an indication of purely how the pitcher does on his own.
Tony, what about you on Justin Verlander here?
The 35 years old, the velocity, it's going to drop off. I would hope someone else picks him. If we get to the fourth or fifth round, he's going to be the best pitcher on the board. This is a perfect example of a guy that I don't want to roster, but you can't ignore what he's done. Mm-hmm. And at that point, sometimes you have to pick him. So I always hope that he gets picked before I get there, so... I think that's going to fall off. I mean, what do you think about it in today's era, 35-year-old pitchers that are, pitching that well? We saw it during the steroid era. We don't see guys coming back like this.
Yeah, it's to Tony's point. It's you look at the numbers, and there's nothing there that screams major regression. But when you're on the board, you're like, damn, 35 years old. No, 34 years old. It's like, you know, he's been around for a while.
He'll be 35 during the season.
Yeah. Do you, Greg?
I thought he would turn 34 in February. I'm wrong on that.
34 in 10 months.
Yep, Justin Verlander.
Okay.
I think Justin. Whatever.
Do you use when you're doing your player analysis, Greg?
Yep.
On pitchers, do you look at FIP?
I think you need. You're not gonna like my answer, but I think you do need to look at FIP a little bit. I think that you can look at the ERA, but you want the fielding independent pitching that you take out everything else and you kind of just look at the pitcher. I think it's something that you should take into account. Yes,
I think Tony made an excellent point about this, along with Cha-Cha and Bagels and Baseball this week when I was listening to it. He was talking about advanced statistics. Tony, you were saying, how can you really come up with accurate projections without the advanced statistics?
Well, basically, if we look at the past performances and we use just the home runs, fly ball, home runs, runs scored, RBIs, what we're looking at is the history, right? And what our job is to project the future.
Yep.
So if we see some of these numbers that shows to some luck concern with that or some statistical change in their performance, like all of a sudden they throw in a fastball more, or they're throwing more curveballs, or you guys just brought out the case of Justin Verlander throwing more sliders. You can't get that by looking at the past numbers. So basically all you're doing is looking at the history, and that's already over with. Our job is to project the future. And if you're not using this stuff, you might as well just close your eyes and pick players.
I don't know. I just don't get it.
Well, what did you get?
So we're looking at a stat that what if he has a good defense behind him?
Well, having a good defense behind him will help anybody, of course. Sure.
This guy's 34 years old. He's been doing this for a long time now.
He has, but his defense behind him is not exactly spectacular. Outside of, let's say, Jose Iglesias.
All right, I'm just curious. I just don't see a situation where he's going to be on the field and it's going to be him.
I understand what you're saying. But again, as Tony mentioned, it's a predictive measure more than anything else. Obviously, ERA is what happened.
It gives you an indication of how good the pitcher is on his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how much he's responsible for that success.
It's 10 years of statistics right here.
But Justin Verlander, you said it when we discussed him initially. He's not the same guy. He doesn't throw 100 miles an hour anymore.
Yeah, because he's an older pitcher. So
right,
he's
so looking at what he did 10 years ago is pretty much irrelevant for what he's going
to
do next year.
Yeah, you're looking at what he did last year, you know, when he pretty much like changed who he was.
Correct.
And then you look at the FIP to think, you know, can he keep that up? You know, and you know how much of that was like, you look at BABIP, you know, how much of that was luck?
Yeah,
you know, how much
totally.
How much is it with the defense? And you, to your point, Greg, you say he doesn't have a good defense behind him. His FIP is only 350. It's showing that Verlander's pitching well. And he's not fortunate because of the defense.
Sure. Totally. That's completely fair.
Well, I mean, if you use just, like, if we just went by bad, you know, home runs and everything else, then we should be drafting Melvin Upton in the first 10 rounds.
Sure.
And nobody's doing that.
There's a lot of guys you can say that about, right? Just, you know, like Melvin Upton, for instance. I remember I was looking at the mock draft, and there's some dude I drafted. Like, Eugenio Suarez hit 25 home runs last year or around there. Drafted him in the second to last round of the mock draft. One last overachiever that I want to get into. We can get into it after the break, and then I want to get into some guys that underachieved a bit in 2016, and their value is much lower than perhaps it should be. I explain. We go over those guys next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. One more player that maybe had a bit of a lucky year, overachieving year last year. I mentioned Kyle Hendricks a moment ago. And the next one is his teammate, and that's actually John Lackey, who, not surprisingly, but he's got to be in his late 30s at this point. And Lackey had a bit of an overachieving year as well. Lackey currently sits at 38 years old, will be 39 at the end of the season. He's always been one of those guys you can pretty much just draft and he's like the perfect number three or number four guy. Are we past that, Scotty, where we can count on John Lackey as a solid SP three or four?
Well, 38 years old. Again, we get into the age here. You know, his strikeout rate definitely went up last year. And, you know, but we also saw the ERA go up, you know, maybe a little bit of regression in the strikeout rate. But, you know, I don't think he was as good as he was 2 years ago with you know, St. Louis. You know, well, actually, you know, he's been pretty good the last 10 years. I don't want him as like a number three starter. You know, maybe like a number four or number five. He's still like, you know, he's up there in age. You know, when you look at the FIP, it was like 380 last year, 357 the year before. He's still getting it done. You know, he's still getting it done with a lot of guile. And, you know, this is another situation where, you know, maybe less like a poor man's Verlander situation where, like, you know, the numbers aren't pointing to regression, but you just wonder how long he can keep this up at the age, you know, that he's at right now, you know, 38 years old.
Corey, you're a big back of the baseball card guy. John Lackey's been doing it since 2002 for the Angels. Now, pitching the Cubs rotation, of course, Cubs do have a good infield defense. Cubs are the best team in baseball, defending World Series champions. Are you confident, John Lackey, you stick him in your rotation and he gets the job done?
As a SP4, yeah, I guess you do have to be confident with his performance. Like, is there anything in the advanced statistics that say something differently? I'm not sure on that one. But you look at the rate that he performed at last season, you got to think at some point he started to get. But the interesting thing about what Lackey did last season, he got even better pitching in the second half. So maybe it was something different to his arsenal this past season that led to him having this amount of success. So I will line up for it again, but I do not want him to be a guy that I have to depend on to give me that kind of output again.
Make it 3-for-3, Tony?
Yeah, he actually changed the way he pitched last year. He went back to where he was in 2011, 2013. That tells me maybe his health is better. He threw less fastballs, only 58%, which he was in the 67% range. And he developed a curveball, which he hadn't thrown over a 10% rate since 2011. So I think he's feeling actually better at 38 years old last year. This is crazy. So I would feel good about a fourth starter, but that'd be it.
Fourth starter. But there's certainly a place for that, obviously.
Yeah.
Very reliable. You want someone like that, I think, at the fourth spot.
These are the kind of guys like Verlander and to a lesser degree like Lackey where you get on the board and you say to yourself, you know, I really don't want to pick him because of the age, but then the numbers are all pointing to the fact that, you know, you can still get quality out of it. You're more motivated later in the draft to do it with Lackey than you are with Verlander early, you know, like Tony was saying. And, you know, I'm still in my slow keeper draft. You know, they leave a lot of the older guys on the board as values, but you want to win this year when you're in a keeper draft. So there's something to be said for taking a 37-year-old guy like Victor Martinez or a pitcher like John Lackey when you're in a keeper draft.
Yeah, I agree with that. Those guys are always in keeper drafts on the board because everyone wants to get younger. No one's playing for now.
Yeah.
But I think your point was right. Like, taking a John Lackey where he's going, you're fine. It's a fourth starter. You're interested there. The Justin Verlander one has me a little less enthused, I think, because you have to take him seven rounds earlier.
You feel like at 34 years old, you know, is he going to get that 9K per nine, or, you know, is there going to be a slip in velocity or something like that, which could just lead to regression across the board?
Now I look at the underachievers, guys that someone could say got unlucky if you just look at their BABIP, for instance, some of the highest in all of Major League Baseball last year. As I was going through this, I thought it was really interesting that one of the highest BABIPs last year at 334 was Noah Syndergaard, who got unlucky, which means he could be even better in 2017, which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
But Michael Pineda is somebody that Yankee fans certainly have waited and waited and waited for this guy just to be able to get the out, right? Get out of the inning, get out of the get out a hitter who he already has two strikes on. And like I said, any Yankee fan will tell you that is the bugaboo when it comes to Michael Pineda. But they can also tell you that he has the strikeout ability, you know, an over 10 K per nine, to strike, to get guys out. He doesn't really walk all that many guys. He has the ability to be a dominant pitcher. But the home run to fly ball percentage, terrible at 17%. The BABIP was terrible. But I think we've seen this now over the last couple of years where these numbers are consistently kind of terrible. Like, I know these points are a bit unlucky, but seemingly each and every year, nothing really changes with this guy. In 2015, his 4.37 ERA was accompanied with a 3.34 at FIP. So you would have drafted him last year saying, wow, this guy's really going to have a nice year. Like, he was so unlucky in 2015. And then in 2016, a 4.82 ERA, and the FIP was over a point under. I get the FIP was still at 3.80, but it was still a point under that ERA, which, again, in the xFIP at 3.30, you have to think, again, he's going to bounce back a little bit. But, Tony, I think there's just something with this guy where everyone's like, I am done with him. I'm done waiting around on him, even though these numbers kind of indicate he should be better.
I want to pick him.
Okay.
And every draft I'm in, I never get him because someone else grabs him. So people are not looking at this, and everybody looks at the promise. Now, the home run to fly ball ratio is a problem because he plays in Yankee Stadium, and I think it's always going to be high, and I think that ERA is going to always be a little higher than someone here. But a K per nine's there. I believe he was one of the leaders in swinging strike rates.
Yep.
I think the guy can pitch, and the ballpark's a factor, and he lets bad at-bats get to him. So mentally, he's not all there as far as being a dominating pitcher. But still, that's the next step of this guy, and it's the talent's there. If this guy gets to double-digit rounds, so based on that 4 ERA, I would draft him every time and take a shot. Other people won't, and everybody's afraid of him, but there always seems to be one guy in a draft that does.
In the Roto Experts mock draft, he went in the 20th round. Forget double digits. He went in the 20th round here of the draft. His current ADP, NFBC, is 211. I mean, he's not costing you very much for a guy that Tony says he wants, and Scott, a lot of people think are very, very talented.
You know, this is one of the most baffling guys in all of fantasy baseball that I was a fan for a long time of. You know, but you look at last year, the ERA was 4.82, the FIP's 3.80. All the advanced statistics for the last few years are pointing to this guy should be better than he is. But throughout the context of the game, he seems to have trouble with his pitches if he doesn't get ahead in the count, especially with his fastball. Because then hitters sit on the fastball, and they take him out of the yard like Tony pointed to. And it rattles his confidence. All the numbers are pointing to this guy being better than he should, but the book on him is like, you know, if this guy doesn't get ahead of you with his fastball, he can get a lot of trouble.
Corey, you're the Yankee fan here. Look, like myself, unlike Tony and Scott, like, you have watched this guy and I know how frustrating it is. Like, I'll see his name on the board, and I'll just, I'm already getting frustrated by the time that he gets two strikes and two outs and lets up a three-run bomb. Like, I'm already waiting for that. But you, as a Yankee fan, can you get on board with Michael Pineda?
Yeah, I can get on board with him, especially at the price you have to pay on draft day. And I think Tony hit the point. You look at the numbers, right, and this guy should be an elite pitcher. He has an elite strikeout rate, you know what I mean? He has excellent fastball. He has good stuff. But he gives up the home runs, and that could be beneficial. I mean, that could be a reason because of the ballpark. But other than that, you know, the numbers don't kind of line up with the talent. So I think it's correct what Tony says. This could be a mental thing. You know what I'm saying? So you got a dude here who is, you know, probably struggles with the language and stuff like that. Maybe a little bit awkward. So he can be, you know, the mental part of the game is like what Tony says is probably what is next to come. If he does that, he's going to be a tremendous value on draft day if he can stay healthy.
What about a guy like Carlos Rodon, who also underachieved a bit last year? Rodon, it was just, what, 2 years ago, everyone was going gaga for this guy. Last year, finished just 9-10, walk per 9, under 3, strikeouts per 9, over 9, but the ERA was 4. The FIP matched, right? The FIP matched at 4, the XFIP just a tad under 4. But the BABIP was incredibly high at 330. Tony, is Carlos Rodon unlucky and he underachieved, or, you know, is he just not as good as many people thought over the last couple of years?
He's the same. This is a lot like Michael Pineda. Yep. I think he's actually a guy that's very good and makes a bad pitch here or there that mm-hmm. comes back as a home run. And it just absolutely, and they, again, another ballpark, the fourth best offensive ballpark in baseball. I like this kid. I'm going to draft this kid. I'll have this kid on a lot of teams. I really think that this season end, he can have a 3.5 ERA. I think he could pencil me up with 180 strikeouts. He's not going to win a ton of games playing in Chicago. If I get double digit wins, I'll be happy. The walks have come down. That was a problem early in his career. I mean, his walks were at 2.95 last year. I think the guy could pitch, and all the peripherals say he could pitch. One bad pitch is killing these guys.
What you have to remember with Rodon, he was drafted in June of 2014. He only pitched 9 minor league games before he got to the majors. This kid is still a work in progress, and he's only 24 years old, and he's only going to get better, and everything that's been the bugaboo for him is going to start to come together at some point, and it very well could be this season.
Corey.
He's got to get the command under control, and it starts to look like he's starting to do that. That's going to be key to him. So he's a player that I'm in on, another guy with elite stuff. So I took him in the Roto Express mock draft. He's a guy that you can get pretty later on in drafts too. But people are going to be on him. I think his draft stock rises, though. I think as we get closer to opening day, I think he's going to start to come up board some.
I think he's a... I don't think he's burned as many people as Michael Pineda has. No, I think he was a little bit younger. People still have that excitement in the back of their mind. And I don't know, like, Tony's 1,000% right. Like, he is very, very much like Pineda, but I don't think he has the stink on him like Pineda does quite yet. So I agree with Corey that he's someone that I think people will remember his age, they'll remember the youth, and they'll remember that he should be pretty good.
Yeah,
and
I felt like last year was like going into last year, they're like, almost like the final year where people are going to give Pineda the benefit of the doubt.
I agree.
You know?
I totally yeah. agree with you. Yeah. And I think they should probably reconsider that here in 2017. Come back to a bit older guys than Pineda and Rodon that underachieved a bit last year. I know one of them Tony absolutely hates, and the other one I never really like at all. We'll explain and pick those two guys apart next on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Carlos Rodon and Michael Pineda, two similar guys. Young pitchers haven't put it all together yet. The advanced statistics say, listen, they should be better. Oddly enough, one advanced statistic, mainly BABIP, that says somebody should be better. If I told you this dude last year, let me get the exact numbers up here so I don't fib. This guy had a 330 BABIP last year. But his strikeout to nine ratio really went down from the year before. I mean, it went down, or it went up rather, but actually went up from the last 2 years, but it's not nearly very, very good. It's 7.29, not great. Walk per nine, under 3. But that BABIP at 330 makes me think he's going to be a little bit better. His ERA was 4.62. The FIP, 3.93. Again, I'm not saying that's very good, but it's going to be better than he was in 2016. The guy that I'm talking about is Adam Wainwright, Tony. I know you don't like him, but he's got to be a little bit better than last year, no?
Oh, he got to be better than last year, but health's a big issue with this guy, right? So that's the first thing you're gambling on now with the sure. health. We're talking about an ERA in the National League almost 4. That's pretty high, right? When you look at it, the FIP at 3.93, even if it comes in there,
yep,
that's a high number mm-hmm. in the National League.
Definitely.
And if I don't get the strikeouts, St. Louis, are they one of the better teams? No, but they're a good team, so maybe I get double-digit wins. Like, what category am I going to excel at? I don't see any of them.
You look at the velocity. It's still around 90 miles an hour, and you know, good difference between some of the off-speed pitches. But you look at the age, and I think the way you're presenting it is like, well, he can't be as bad as last year. But you know, at 35 years old, with injuries, etc., you know, he had a few good performances last year. But you know, you're looking at the FIP, and you're saying, okay, the guy can be around 4. Yeah, he's going to be better than last year, but it's nothing exciting anymore. Yeah,
there's actually one number that says he was lucky last year, and that is the strand rate. It's under the league average of 71 at 69.5%.
Mm. I don't think there's anything to see here, really.
Not interested. You're not
interested.
Corey, you are. How are you out? You're Mr. Back of the Baseball Card guy.
Yeah, the back of the baseball card also has about, what's this about? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That was about 8 seasons of over 190 innings, something like that. If my math is correct.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a lot of tread. It's a lot of miles on this tire.
But you
right
love Justin
here.
Verlander, who is the same thing.
Justin Verlander was good last year.
Yes, he was.
This guy was horrific.
Sure.
This guy was terrible last season. You know what I'm saying? So I don't really see it. He's okay. You say he improved from last season. Well, can he really get any worse? I mean, yeah, he could, but I'm not in on Adam Wainwright. I'm not buying it.
One more,
I think it's done.
One more guy that certainly not was never in Adam Wainwright's class. He's battling dead arm right now in spring training, and that is Mr. Colin McHugh. And I'm never a Colin McHugh guy. Ever since he was back in the Mets system, I never really liked him. But McHugh last year, 13-10, K per 9, over 8, walk per 9, 2.6. His ERA was 4.34, the FIP was about 3.95, so not a terribly large difference there. But his BABIP was about 3.38, which said, all right, he got a little bit unlucky here. Ground ball percentage was 41%. Home run to fly ball ratio around 12%, so he got a bit unlucky. Is Colin McHugh somebody, Scotty, that you could round out your rotation with here?
I don't really want to. You know, he's a good example of how you can't chase wins when in 19 2 years ago. He had a 3.89 ERA with a 3.58 FIP. But, you know, I think, you know, maybe you're hopefully gets back to that. You know, the strikeout rate isn't dominant. To me, there's really nothing exciting here at all where, you know, I want to go out and pick him.
Tony.
So this is a perfect example of why the strikeout rate matters. Okay. When you get these batted balls in plays with guys that don't strike out, you take out the variable, the more strikeouts you can get of those balls being in play. And where we get more and more pitches, it seems like pitcher trying to pitch to contact and less strikeouts. This is why you take those strikeout pitches and take this variable out of play. Colin McHugh 1 year, 2 years ago, puts together a good season. Last year puts together a terrible season. And you don't know, there's not much difference here except these batter balls in play.
Yep.
That's why the strikeout is such an important art. And going back to what we talked about earlier with the advanced statistics or the numbers on the back of the baseball card. Well, the advanced statistic, the one thing is strikeout percentage. I don't know if we count that as an advanced statistic. It's not. The percentage of strikeouts is not there. K per 9 is not a number there. But those are the guys that you got to target and that are gold because we want to take out factors that we can't determine, like balls that are in play, balls that are left of the field,
yep.
And give me the guys with the 9 strikeouts.
Yeah. Corey?
Strikeout rate over 8 last season. problem with the long ball, but he should be all right sliding to the, you know, the back of Houston's rotation. Does he have mixed league draftability? Yeah, I think so. He's a guy that you can get on board with late.
Okay, there you go. He went undrafted here in our Roto Experts mock draft. Speaking of the Roto Experts mock draft,
watch list guy.
Yeah. Speaking of the Roto Experts, he's got another pickup, by the way. I don't like Colin McHugh. He doesn't do it for me. He's a.
You don't like Irish guys?
You know what? The ballpark's not great. It's in the AL. It just doesn't do it for me. Speaking of the mock draft, I had a bit of an issue toward the end of the draft. I'm going to explain that on the other side of this. Roto Experts in the morning continues right after this. So we do these mock drafts. We sat here for about a week, maybe a little less, doing it. And we're mowing them down, moving it right along, feeling good. But you know what pisses me off? There is one guy in every draft that takes forever. And then you get to the later rounds, it's even worse. Like, number one, it's a mock draft. It's like the 22nd round, dude. Like, why do you got to take all 4 hours, Corey? Not you, but somebody else in the draft.
I wouldn't be able to explain why that would be.
Does it bother you?
Maybe the later rounds, they came. Was it the weekend when these rounds came up? Because when the weekend, you think you have to give a little bit of leeway.
I don't care about the weekend. The weekend, you're doing your own thing. You're off your time. Yep. I'm sitting here. It was like Monday, Tuesday.
And somebody's in the 22nd round and the clock is expiring.
Clock, 3 hours into your clock or something like that.
They lost interest. They got the meat of their roster done, and they lost interest.
It's either one of two, like Corey says, like they're not as interested, or B, you know, I think this would be smaller of the sample size. You know, there are guys that may be taking their time, you know, with their pick, and you know, maybe in the later rounds, you know, they're really like mulling over the pick for a longer period for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that they lost interest, and that bothers me. Like, when you're in a real draft, Tony, and you get to these later rounds, and it's a slow draft, do you lose interest?
No, this is where you win.
Exactly. I agree.
Winning and losing. And we all, because we do this, I would think that in this type of draft, you all have guys that you, like, think that are going to be better than their draft position, and, like, you want to get these guys on your team. Like, I think when you talk about having guys on every team, it's the guys in the later rounds that end up on there because there's a guy you think that's being drafted, you know, five rounds later than he should, and those are the guys you're on top of.
Correct. And instead, you're spending 4 hours and taking, you know, whoever the top guy on the board was, and that really bothered me. Like, not that it's a mock, I get it, right? But we're using this mock, and we're talking about it on the air every day, and I just felt like certain people just took forever, and it like kind of brought my interest out of it a little bit. Like, just go, man. Just pick.
Maybe they were mentally trying to get in your mind. That was their
maybe
strategy.
Yeah, there's a fine line of etiquette you talk about in the slow draft because on one hand it's a slow draft, but still naturally inherently as fantasy players, we want the guy to get the next pick, especially when we're on deck. You know, I'm in another slow draft right now in a keeper league, and you know there are guys that like, you know, they send a certain owners, you're up, you know, or you're on the board because they feel they might either A, they might take long, or B, you know, they're on deck and they want to get up as quick as they can, whereas other guys be like, okay, you know, it's a slow draft, I can take my time, I can run my errands, I can do whatever I got to do, and then I can come back and draft.
Corey.
Yeah, that happens once, but not consistently, right? If somebody has something to do.
Well, that's what. Yeah,
there are a few guys in my draft, though. There are like two, three guys that like. There's one guy ahead of me who seemingly takes like at least 6 to 7 hours per pick.
Does he actually, or you just feel
no,
like that?
I notice when I'm on deck, you know that when it's coming up to me, it's consistently between 5 and 9 hours, something like that.
Oh, God. That's too long.
Then again, I'm like, okay, it's a slow draft. You know, it inherently comes with the territory.
But if everyone takes 9 hours, you don't get done. Like, that's what
right.
people don't realize.
That's
if
true.
Everyone did the same thing.
See, that's true, but in this draft, there's like one or two guys that do that. I've been in slow drafts, though, and I'm sure we all have, though, where more than the average will do that, like a big chunk of the, and they'll say we'll get nowhere because of that, to Tony's point. But you know, in this draft, there's two guys really that take up a lot of the clock.
So Corey, when you're doing these drafts, and they are long, and I get it, and at some point you're just like, all right, I'm on to the next thing. Do you get bored when you get into the later rounds? Honestly.
No, I think this is a good time where you can. I think later rounds is a good time to find people. You know what I'm saying? Do a little bit of more research, dig a little bit deeper, look at your roster construction, figure out what you need and stuff like that. So I enjoy the later rounds, to be honest with you. I think it's a little bit more challenging, and that's kind of where the drafts, not the drafts, we can't win drafts, only Jake, but that's kind of where the leagues are won, you know what I'm saying? Those guys you get in those later rounds.
Yeah, it's like right now, it's like I'm obsessing more about my later picks than I am my earlier picks. You know, I'm in the 17th round of my keeper league draft. It was like the 20-somethingth round of like maybe a really draft. And I'm sitting there going, man, it's like I really need a second catcher, but Justin Bour and Marco Estrada are still on the board. Can I really wait another 12 picks to get the second catcher when there's one guy left that I consider decent?
Do you, Corey, I want to go back to you here. What we did last week and this week, it's a mock draft. I realize that again. Do you truly and honestly treat the mock as you would a real draft? Because you just told me,
you just
told me when you get to the end of the draft, that's where you win. Tony said the same thing. Like, this is where you win. I love these picks. I'm into these picks. Scotty says I spend more time on these picks because this is where I can really take advantage of my knowledge and beat some other people. When it comes to the mock, is that really the case? At the end of the draft, are you sitting here 22nd round being like, oh boy?
No, yeah, but I mean, you're
honestly.
No, I'm dead serious. You're in a mock with knowledgeable guys and stuff like that. So yeah, I do take it seriously, even in the mock draft, even if it's not being played out. This is going to be put in the Roto Experts exclusive as a package. So
it's available now, by the way. RotoExperts.com.
Free radio is the promo code that you can use to check out. Hit the bell, Scott.
That's where. Yeah,
there you go.
There you go, right
Thank
there.
Thank you.
So, no, I take it serious. Listen, I've said it before. I say it again. I think mock drafting, learning the player pool, mock drafting, knowing roster construction is a better way of doing your preparation than focusing on FIP.
What about people, Tone, that in these mock drafts, they're just going to auto pick? Like, they're not going to waste anybody's time, but they're just going to auto pick because they don't care. Are they doing a disservice to the readers?
No, you don't see. This is your lack of knowledge. Now, you don't get it. Like, it's so easy to go on auto pick, and I do it every draft I'm in. And like NFBC, I pay $150. I go on auto because I know before the pick, what do I need? I need home runs. All right, so I got the top 10 home run guys on the board in my queue. I have the computer on each and every time. While I'm in the house, I work from home, so I'm always monitoring the draft.
Yep.
And so you go on auto, and these other guys, it doesn't matter. People are changing their queue. Like, you never see a guy that doesn't belong there get picked. So these people do it all the time. And guys that I play against all the time, that's what we do because we know what we're doing.
Scott, do you ever go on auto pick?
Yeah, I think I did for my first pick because I had everybody queued up.
Sure.
I was number 8.
Right.
And they were starting at 10 a.m. and I had something I had to go to. So
yeah,
I put it on auto pick. For the first pick,
right?
Because I knew I was going to get who I wanted for top 8 guys in there.
Of course.
But other than that, I'm never, just about never ever on auto pick.
Corey?
I'm always close to
auto pick. I had no problem with auto pick. Yeah, I look roster construction. Look at what's out there. Get my queue together. Throw it on auto pick and keep it pushing.
All right, so it's very interesting. I guess maybe I'm not aware of the auto pick phenomenon.
In NFBC, I have probably at times 100 people in my queue.
You have 100 people in your queue. And do you reevaluate the queue after every pick that you make?
Every pick.
Okay.
Yeah, I fill up the queue, but I've never on auto pick. I'm always filling up the queue.
All right. We're going to come back. We talk a little football next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Some coaches of interest for Corey Parson and something that's really pissing me off. We'll explain next on the Roto Experts.